Welcome to SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research, from discovery to clinical application. You're listening to a Community Perspectives episode with Dr. Norbert Widener. I'm your host, David.
And I'm Faria. Today, we will be discussing the paper titled Safety and Efficacy of Intrathecal Antibodies to NOGO A in Patients with Acute Cervical Spinal Cord Injury, a randomized, double-blind, multicenter, placebo-controlled phase 2b trial. This was published in Lancet Neurology in January of 2025, so very, very recent. This paper was submitted by Asia's International Standards Committee, and our guest today is Dr. Norbert Widener. Dr. Widener is a neurologist, and his primary area of clinical and academic interest is in spinal cord injury. He is a professor and clinical chair of the Spinal Cord Injury Center at Heidelberg Hospital in Germany. He runs a preclinical laboratory aiming to establish promising experimental therapies for traumatic spinal cord injury, an experimental neurorehabilitation unit investigating assistive neurotechnologies and advanced SCI-related databases, and a clinical trials unit focusing on observational and interventional studies in SCI patients. His research interests are broad, including trying to shed more light into the pathophysiology of spinal cord injury, understand the natural recovery and processes in spinal cord injury, and to advance promising therapeutic strategies into clinical trials. Following the recent successful completion of phase 2 anti-NOGO study as a lead investigator for all the EU sites participating, further interventional and observational studies are currently prepared to be conducted within the European Multi-Center Study about Spinal Cord Injury, the EMSCI network, which he was recently nominated to head as a speaker. Thank you for being here, Dr. Widener.
Thank you for having me.
So, Dr. Widener, it seems like this study was really carried on the back of this EMSCI network. Can you give us a little bit of history? Like, was EMSCI designed just to test this NOGO?
Yeah, I mean, EMSCI was not designed to test just this anti-NOGO antibody, but to be honest, back in early 2000, kind of the initiative was taken back then by Professor Martin Schwab to tell us clinicians, hey, I'm ready, I have a drug, so have you done your homework? And that's kind of what initiated a thought process, an intense thought process to form a network of SCI clinical sites and to agree to examine patients at defined time points and align this across sites in order to better understand natural recovery, which is of course a prerequisite for a good clinical trial design and to run clinical trials. And actually the first clinical trial we ran was a phase 1 anti-NOGO trial, but in the end the idea is of course not just to investigate drugs like anti-NOGO, but any other promising drug or intervention that will help to improve outcome in SCI patients.
Yeah, sitting here in the United States, I'm looking at the countries that spanned, you know, the authors here. You got Germany, Switzerland, these kind of areas. I might think, okay, harmonizing clinical care in these areas might be, but then Spain's thrown in here. Can't imagine as an American how you coordinated across all these countries. Can you give us a little bit of background on that?
It's of course a lot of fun. To interact with players from different countries across Europe, and they all have the very same motivation or extremely high motivation to run such challenging clinical trials. So this is a positive thing, and that this is really also the driver that lets us survive, because as opposed to you in the US with one language and one country, and we have different languages, obviously, and even so we are combine in the EU, we still have different regulatory systems, and they need to be, they still are not harmonized, and of course that involves a lot of administrative work, and so this is the downside. In the end, it worked out, and it worked out nicely, but the process to get it going is tedious.
That's very understandable, and we appreciate all the effort that everyone puts in to get this information out. Dr. Widener, you had mentioned just a minute ago about phase one clinical trials. This study was a phase 2b clinical trial. Can you explain to our listeners what the different phases are and what that means?
Yeah, so in the phase one, of course, since it was a drug that never entered a human body, the main focus is on safety and feasibility, meaning that the application route is safe, and also that the drug by itself is safe and does not cause any concerning side effects. So that was the phase one study related to anti-NOVO, which we ran between 2006 and 2010. And now the study we're talking about was a phase two study. And here, besides still feasibility and safety, we look into aspects of efficacy, where we really want to find out does the drug help to improve neurological recovery after spinal cord injury?
Yeah, we're really happy that the medical researchers start with safety and then move on to efficacy. Very understandable process. So for this trial, some safety was established before. Always you're tracking safety regardless. But let's hope that this helps. So can you tell us a little bit about the therapeutic that was evaluated here for safety and efficacy? Can you tell us about NG101?
Yeah, so NG101 is an antibody that specifically targets the protein NOGO, and this protein has been discovered a few decades ago to inhibit outgrowth of nerves that have been transected after spinal cord injury, and it has also been discovered if we or if one neutralizes this protein with a specific antibody named anti-NOGO, or in this particular type called NG101, that we can effectively neutralize the NOGO protein. And by these means, we can elicit, for example, in preclinical research in animal models, we can elicit nerve regrowth that is then also accompanied by functional recovery in the species that were investigated.
So help us understand, because normally hitting the brakes doesn't make the car go. So can you explain a little bit about how the anti part works?
So the anti part works that literally the antibody removes the protein from the system, meaning from the environment where axons have been severed and or nerves that want to regrow but can't, because this extrinsic factors like a almost like a physical barrier prevent nerves from regrowing. And this antibody kind of removes this barricade in order to help nerves to cross this barrier. Do you
Yeah,
say?
for the listeners, unfortunately, common in biology is the need to remove a barrier. So often that growth is not due to the thing not growing, it's due to something stopping its growth. So thanks so much for that explanation, Doc. So now you've got your drug, you're going to put it in, but why can't I just take a pill, Dr. Widener? Why can't I just eat it?
Yes. So the central nervous system, including the spinal cord, is quite privileged in a sense that it creates a pretty significant barrier around it, and that has of course positive effects, but it also has limitations in terms of the drugs that can be administered through the known routes, like taking a drug as a pill or through an intravenous line. With this antibody, it would just not work since this antibody is not able to cross this barrier into the brain or spinal cord, and therefore it has to be brought really close to the spinal cord. And here, the so-called intrathecal space, where there is fluid circulating around the spinal cord, is accessed, and the drug given into this intrathecal space and delivered there.
And then jumping off of that, is there for our listeners, a particular type of individual with spinal cord injury that would have more benefit with this treatment modality? So looking at complete versus a incomplete injury, a motor versus a sensory incomplete injury.
Yeah, so that was one I think main finding out of this study is that I mean we enrolled both motor complete as well as motor incomplete patients, so meaning from AISA all the way through AISD, and what we found out when we build cohorts of motor complete and motor incomplete participants, we did not see relevant effects in terms of motor recovery in the motor complete group. However, we found effects in terms of motor recovery in the motor incomplete groups, meaning AISC and D participants. And we think this is likely due to the mode of action of anti-NOGO. So this protein or this antibody will not allow that nerves can grow back through a scar or fluid-filled cyst. This will not be possible. How they need to have a still intact barrier, also called tissue bridge, surrounding the injury site, and once you have that, you very likely have a patient that has a motor incomplete spinal cord injury. And I think that is a good rationale or a good basis to understand why it's more likely that this drug will work in motor incomplete patients rather than complete patients.
So, Dr. Widener, you have completeness for us. That's great. And we have to ask all the other spinal cord questions. So, would you anticipate, we know you didn't test it here, but quadriplegia, tetraplegia versus paraplegia, would the drug still have a similar effect?
I would think that it has a similar effect. I could not see from the biological perspective why it should not work in paraplegic patients. However, in tetraparetic patients, we have, let's say, so-called eloquent areas, meaning motor function that we can test at let's say in a high resolution available. That means over several centimeters, each centimeter or millimeter gained in terms of axon regrowth likely translate in motor recovery if it happens. But in a thoracic spinal cord, we do not have these eloquent, so-called eloquent motor areas. Of course, there is motor output also at thoracic level, but this is not something that we can easily measure. And therefore, yes, I think it would also work in thoracic spinal cord injury, but it is really extremely difficult to assess in the first place. So once we have more re hopefully robust results with anti-NOGO in cervical spinal cord injury, I'm confident that we, of course, can move on to thoracic spinal cord injury, but there we really need to think about very thoroughly what would be a really good primary endpoints.
Yes, great. So complete, incomplete, paratetra, and now on to the big question in the room. Do you think this could work in someone with a chronic spinal cord injury? We have people living 40-something years post-injury nowadays.
Yes, so also extremely valid point, I mean also when you look at the animal research that could help to inform us, there aren't that many studies that give us a clue, and as we know from animal research, a lot of let's say still fluid pathophysiological processes occur in the early early months after spinal cord injury, and then kind of scar formation and deposition of matrix components. That all happens early on, and therefore, unfortunately, with just an approach of anti-no-go administration, I would be skeptical that we see an effect in chronic SEI. So meaning past, let's say, few years after spinal cord injury, and there might be an effect, but then we need to have additional door openers to support anti-no-go effects, and there we are still, let's say, in the beginning to understand that and have really good strategies to overcome these barriers later on after spinal cord injury, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up with how complex spinal cord injury can be in acute phase versus chronic phase versus the type of injury for all the individuals and how that really complicates situations and change the effectiveness of a lot of modalities that we're using now. Pivoting from that, what are some, you had mentioned in the paper some adverse events or things that you the team had noted, but what are some adverse events that individuals with spinal cord injury should be aware of with this antibody that you would want to make sure that they know?
I mean, in terms of, I mean, really related to the drug, to the anti-no-go, there is not really something specific that we have identified. Of course, we identified many adverse events throughout the course of the recovery period or over the first month after spinal cord injury, but those were all events that you can easily attribute to the natural course of the disease instead of relate them to the drug. And of course, we really took great care to look also into potential detrimental effects that one can easily envision that it could be due to the drug. For example, if the drug promotes axon regrowth, that doesn't necessarily mean that this regrowth is beneficial, right? So it could also be regrowth that leads to harmful side effects like neuropathic pain or spasticity or increased spasticity and increased neuropathic pain. But even with a assessments that we did, that we employed to get insights into that, we could not see that there is more neuropathic pain or more spasticity related to the anti-no-go antibody. Of course, to the administration route by itself, we were still surprised. I mean, acute cervical spinal cord injury is a severe condition. Patients are in the ICU and have many other issues, and on top of that, they are exposed to intrathecal drug administration. And but overall, this was well, let's say, taken by the patients. Of course, one or the other patients suffered from some postural headache over the first days after the injection, but overall that was a really minor aspect and did not impede the completion of the study.
Yeah, we really appreciate the open and honest discussion about what we call adverse effects in the or adverse events in the medical profession. All interventions come with some risks. So thanks for sharing that, Dr. Wagner. We just hope the risks outweigh the benefits, right? And so for this particular paper that was published here, it looked like for the number one thing you guys picked as your call endpoint, there was not an effect of the drug, but maybe you can have a combination with other things in the future. Maybe there can be tweaks to the formulation. How does the team plan to carry forward from here?
Yeah, so this, I mean, in the overall cohort, we did not see a significant effect, neither with the primary endpoint, the motor recovery, upper extremity motor score, nor with secondary endpoints. But when we looked into subgroups, as pointed out with motor incomplete spinal cord injury, we saw effects in the order of 4 upper extremity motor score points, and also followed by functional recovery, which was quite encouraging. So, as a next step, we want to, let's say, dive into this signal that we detected with this phase 2b study, and do another phase 2 study. And since this antibody that we investigated in this study we are talking about, this antibody expired, and a new antibody had to be formulated, and was already formulated. So we are running currently a new clinical trial, and actually here we have to go back to phase 1 again, since it's a new antibody, make sure that it's safe, and then come back to another phase 2 study in motor incomplete cervical spinal cord injured patients. And what we also aim for is to increase the dose we're gonna expose the patients to, and since we noted that safety profile was absolutely favorable with the dose that we had, and we are confident, or we think that with increasing the dose, we can even tease out more motor recovery, and that's what we're going to test in subsequent clinical, in ongoing and subsequent clinical trials.
Yeah, you'll forgive my slight misframing there, because some of these results are very exciting. It was for the overall group that the effect wasn't seen, but you guys employed some very clever approaches here. And just for the listeners, not that we have to understand any of this, but the team used this technique called unbiased recursive partitioning with conditional interference tree in order to find some of these subgroups. So if you're really into the nerdy math, you can go and take a look at that. But really, really exciting how that played out, that clever use of the math there. And as our final question here, big in the news recently has been in the, we'll use the FDA categorizations of device, drug, and biologic, a lot of devices that are used to stimulate the central nervous system. For example, we recently had an episode on the Onward Medical Incorporated, now commercialized ARC-EX device that is a transcutaneous spinal cord stimulator. So can you imagine combining a molecule like NG101 or an anti-NOGO with something like a spinal cord stimulator?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, going into a combinatorial approach makes absolutely sense, because there are many aspects that impede nerve regeneration and in the end recovery. And if, in particular, if you have combinatorial compounds that are complementary, it's extremely promising. And so if you have something that is capable of let's say activating the damaged central nervous system through means of electrical stimulation, and combine that with a biological that does it from a different perspective, it can only be meaningful. And also in this combination, of course, there's always the concern that if you combine interventions, that it may create unpredictable side effects or adverse events. But I think in such a combination, I would think that this is, let's say, foreseeable and realistic to combine it in such a way. And for example, the approach that you mentioned, to combine it with non-invasive transcutaneous stimulation, could be a promising one for the future.
All right, Dr. Widener, thanks so much for coming on. We're really excited to see these, phased publications from the anti-NOGO that is coming out of IMSCI, but we're keeping an eye on IMSCI. It's really exciting to see these big trial networks that are coming together and allowing for maybe hopefully in the future some plug and play of therapeutics into these big existing kind of underlying structures that people like yourself are bringing into being. So thanks so much for coming and sharing on this paper.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thanks for all the really interesting questions, and more than happy to serve you in this respect, and happy to do this in the future as well.
Thank you, Dr. Weidner.
Look out, we might take you up on that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives, brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. The paper discussed in this episode was chosen based on the recommendation of Asia's International Standards Committee. The podcast was founded thanks to the leadership of Dr. Suzanne Groh and is now made possible by your producer hosts, David McMillan, Maria Kolick, and Marla Petriello, our production assistant and editor, Abby Fox, and Asia's front office. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please contact us at SCIPerspectivesPodcast@gmail.com.